Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
You're listening to a Joycast from the community radio station Joy 94.9.
Good afternoon. It's Thursday, the 26th of April 2012. I'm Dean Beck. Thank you for joining me on the line today. Shortly, we hope to speak to 3AW's Neil Mitchell. Now, Neil Mitchell and Joy's own David McCarthy will be doing a simulcast next Thursday. The focus of it is regarding youth suicide, but we hope to speak to Neil Mitchell to discuss his somewhat about face regarding the likes of same-sex marriage and his newfound support of the gay and lesbian community. Looking forward to speaking to Neil Mitchell shortly. We will also speak to Wayne Nichols. He is the proprietor of Saks Fetish and Leather in Sydney, and there is this new campaign in Sydney. It's a push for a light rail system up and down Oxford Street. What on earth is that about? We'll find out soon. We'll speak to David Hunt here from Joy. Now, he and Sue are celebrating 2 years together on air tomorrow here at Joy. And we will speak to Sam Minter in a moment regarding the road to the Bingham Cup in Manchester. The Melbourne Chargers are heading over to Manchester very shortly. Of course, we'd love to hear your thoughts. We want to know what's on your mind. Get in contact with us. This is how you do so.
Call Joy.
1300 Joy 949. SMS 0427 Joy 949. Email on air at joy.org.au. You want a man?
But before we go any further, I want to kick it off with a really interesting little story that I found, thanks to ABC Rural Radio. This is a quirky little story about the other Mardi Gras, if you like, happening in the Northern Territory. I didn't know it existed, but it is a delightful little heartwarmer. Have a listen to this.
It began as a conversation between a couple of friends in a Northern Territory pub. Shelley MacDonald was one of them.
There was a group of us sitting in the bar one night and we decided that we needed a party to bring the whole town together. And the drunker we got, the more outlandish the decisions come. And, so Mardi Gras started from that.
But Australia's most remote Mardi Gras wasn't born without ruffling a few feathers. Local policeman and key organiser Stephen Norris copped a bit of flack after the first parade.
The person I worked for at the time wasn't very happy with what we did. Yeah, we had a few words. He wasn't happy with my attire because I wore chaps and I didn't have much on underneath.
And perhaps the costume wasn't the only objection. Rumour has it one of the floats on the first parade looked suspiciously like a police car. But a few years on, local objections became more serious. In the early days of the Northern Territory intervention, the heightened anxieties around sexual behaviour led some locals to question the appropriateness of a Mardi Gras in Elliot.
Well, I personally think it is appropriate. Some people just seem to think when the intervention come in, with all the stuff that went on about that it wasn't appropriate to have gay and lesbian with the sexual connotations and that sort of thing, but I don't think it's that way inclined at all. And most of us Elliot people have no problem with gay and lesbians. It's a few short-sighted people, but you get that anywhere you go. So you just work through it.
And work through it they did. Now in its eighth year, people of all sexual orientations have made the pilgrimage along the Stuart Highway. And organiser Stephen Norris says you get all types.
The people here are unique. You know, I mean, you're going to do something here, otherwise you go mad. So, you know, we thought we'd have the Mardi Gras. And, I mean, look at the people here. I mean, he hasn't got hardly any clothes on and he's happy. Nice bum. And I'm a guy, sorry.
And you're not gay?
No, I'm married to a woman.
Another Mardi Gras regular is James Billings. But just so you can picture him, here's what he's wearing.
So I've done a full cat suit in done with lace and red leather boots and looking fabulous, I suppose.
James is a gay man who's lived in Tennant Creek for nearly 9 years.
I'm accepted. It's pretty cool, actually. There's quite a few gays in Tennant Creek, but most of us keep to ourselves and just do what we do.
But another attendee, Pixie Scabs, hasn't felt so included. He'll tell you about that in just a moment, but tonight Pixie's wearing
a fluoro green body sock that's crutchless, bottomless and hipless.
And fishnet.
And it's fishnet. It's fluoro green fishnet, darling. And I've got my black budgie smugglers on to keep the pink bits in place.
Pixie says the Mardi Gras is one of the few times he feels truly accepted.
Difficult, actually, but I'm actually quite a straight-acting person in my normal day-to-day life, so this is a bit exciting to get frocked up and stuff like that, so, yeah.
Is it an inclusive community?
In Katherine? No, it's quite, they're quite a disparate mob, so there's not that many. There's a few couples in Katherine, but not that many gay single men like me.
But the more I ask people about sexuality at the Elliott Mardi Gras, the more it seemed like a real non-issue for them, gay or straight. And Robert from Tennant Creek says that's because the event is more about community and welcoming difference.
For me, it's about a community showing itself off. It exposes everyone to something a little bit different that happens mainly in cities.
And 11 Greenstones from Alice Springs agrees.
It's not about a sexuality, it's about a culture. We come to gay and lesbian Mardi Gras because it's like I'm already having fun. And Elliott's one of those places, it's a town on my way to somewhere else. It's like on the road and I pass by here, I stop in. But this is the first time that I'll stay here and it's a good time already.
And perhaps that's the greatest achievement of having a Mardi Gras in a town like Elliott. It makes people company.
That's Caddy Brain from ABC Rural Radio at the Elliott Mardi Gras in the Northern Territory. It is my great pleasure to welcome to Joy 94.9 3AW's Neil Mitchell. Thank you very much for joining us today, Mr. Mitchell. Why is it that you've done this about face regarding gay issues? Because I can recall a long time ago you giving the likes of Christine Nixon one hell of a going over for being a part of our Pride March.
Yeah, I don't think I did criticise her for going to the Pride March because I don't think it's the role of the Chief Commissioner to be supporting any individual group. It's one thing to be supporting in terms of the way they operate with that group, but they shouldn't be marching at what could be a protest. And look, I don't think I've done a dramatic about face. I think I've always had an attitude of fairness and decency. I think the community's done an about face, but I don't think I have. I mean, I've always been very concerned about youth suicide and youth issues, and that's what we're talking about.
When you say the community's done an about face, tell us what you mean by that.
I think that the majority of the community would now support gay marriage. Now, the politicians don't agree with me. I think the majority of my audience would probably support it, and that would surprise some people who have this image of them being a mad right-wing lot. They're not actually. They're actually just people in the community who've got, are either gay or they've got gay sons and daughters themselves. I think the community has swung around and said, oh, come on, why not? Let's just get on with it. I think Julia Gillard is very wrong.
She's not the only one, though.
No, she's not, but she's the surprising one, isn't she? In a sense, you'd expect better from her.
Indeed. Maybe you'd expect better from the likes of Mr. Abbott, who himself has a sister who's a lesbian.
Isn't that interesting? I found two things puzzling about that. One is, one thing I admired was that he had resisted the temptation to tell the world that he had a gay sister.
Yeah.
When people were attacking him and saying, what would you know? You've never met a gay person. He resisted that temptation, which was a decent thing to do. But on the other hand, if he's got a gay sister who he says he loves very much, and he was the first member of the family to be inclusive after her marriage broke up and she had to leave the marital home, he was the most, she says, the most supportive of the family, how is it he still doesn't get it? I mean, I don't understand, having been so through such a personal experience of it, how he doesn't understand it, how he doesn't get it, how he doesn't change his mind. It really puzzles me.
And yet he has always said that he has very close friends that are part, are members of our community, if you like.
Yep.
We never realised just how close they were.
See, I think it's quite, well, that's true. I think it's quite legitimate for people to hold differing views on it, but I don't think the politicians have been quite legitimate in this. I find it impossible to believe that Julia Gillard, with her background in politics and her personal background, would be opposed to gay marriage. I think it looks to me like a political decision. At least with Tony Abbott, you could say, well, you know, former priest, staunch Catholic, maybe he genuinely believes it.
Which brings up an interesting issue. The position that the Catholic Church continues to take is with regards to same-sex marriage. It seems a little bit hypocritical, considering the topic of conversation is suicide and youth suicide, the child abuse that continues to be exposed from the Catholic Church, and the suicides that has led to.
Yeah.
I find it very difficult to get my head around.
That they
That they can be so vehement regarding same-sex marriage and yet turn a blind eye to what's been going on within their own organisation.
Oh, there are so many things I find impossible to understand about the Catholic Church. I would just say at the moment, well, for years through their history, there have been people in the church who have put defending the church ahead of defending children, and that to me is obscene.
Youth suicide is your focus for the simulcast for Joy and for 3AW next Thursday, 10 till midday. Looking forward to it. And, tell us what how it came about and what you want to focus on.
Well, we had an approach from... I did a large segment of the program on youth suicide some months ago. We got a huge reaction to it. Had an approach from the people at Joy saying, well, you know, you're interested in the issue. What can we do? What can we do to get together? And I think one of them said, well, why don't we do a joint broadcast? And probably thought we'd never agree to it. And I thought, no, what an excellent idea. It'll probably shock both audiences. I mean, I come and talk to you and you say, what are you doing changing your mind? My audience will say, what are you doing on Joy FM as well? But I think that's a good thing. I think it's inclusive. I think, look, it's got to go somewhere. I hope we can sort of, well, we're not going to finish, not going to stop youth suicide tomorrow, but I'd hope we can go somewhere toward demystifying some of the issues. I've been in journalism 42 years, and one of the first things I was told was, you don't talk about suicide. Well, it's not working. We've got to try something.
I've done a couple of specials on youth suicide, extensive specials, and every time that I've done it, I've broken what is, I guess, the traditional rules, but done it sensitively. And every time that it's happened, it has got so much wonderful feedback from the community. The support for us covering the subject has been extraordinary. And I just think you're right. We have to talk about it.
We've got similar sort of feedback. And, you know, in commercial radio, there are certain areas, and commercial media, there are certain areas where people say, oh, you don't want to do that. That's too dangerous. The audience will turn off. And, you know, we're about having an audience. I found that what we did on youth suicide in particular, we had Pat McGorry in and some people from Reach, and we did all this sort of thing. And we had some of the strongest reaction I've ever had to anything we've done from concerned people, people with relatives or friends who have been touched by it, people who are worried about their kids. That's what it's all about. As I say, we've got to go somewhere. I hope we can get some sort of call to arms out of it at least, and some understanding of the additional horror of youth suicide within the gay and lesbian community.
Indeed. And it extends beyond that. I mean, when we look at bullying, it's not just about the gay and lesbian community. The principles are the same.
Oh, exactly the same. And, you know, there are kids being bullied you know, because they can't play footy or because they're a nerd or whatever, nothing to do with their sexuality. It's just that the figures relating to the suicides of gay young people, as you well know, are just much higher. And that's, you know, that's part of what we want to explore.
3AW's Neil Mitchell and Joy 94.9's David McCarthy will be broadcasting next Thursday from 10 a.m. till noon. Who's the guest lineup, Mr. Mitchell?
Oh, I can't tell you.
Oh, right.
I'm sworn to secrecy.
Fair enough.
But look, I have asked both the Prime Minister and the Opposition Leader for messages. I don't want to interview them. The most important thing we can do is talk to the people. The people who are living through it, who have been through it, who are going through it, from whether they be straight or gay or parents or grandparents, doesn't matter. They're the people we've got to talk to. We have got a couple of people who have been in public life and have experience in the area. We'll be talking to them.
And immediately following that broadcast, on the line, we'll be joined by the CEO of Beyond Blue, Kate Carnell, for a full hour as a follow-up to the simulcast. Neil Mitchell, thank you very much for joining us today on Joy 94.9.
Well, Dean, did you notice David McCarthy, when I had him on air on 3AW last week, finished the discussion by saying, "We make a lovely couple."
The photograph was beautiful.
Thanks for your time.
Neil Mitchell, thank you very much. You are on the line with Dean Beck. Well, with less than a month to go, Melbourne Chargers are gearing up to head to Manchester for the Bingham Cup. Melbourne Chargers president is Sam Minter. He joins us on the line. Sam, welcome.
G'day, Dan. How's it going?
Very well, thank you. And congratulations to the Melbourne Chargers. 2012 is looking like a good year for you guys.
Yeah, it definitely is. As you say, we've got 5 weeks to go tomorrow. And it's a very exciting time for the club. It's been a long 24-month journey to get to this point, and we're nearly there.
Most recently, you've had a change of your host club. Tell us about that.
Yeah, correct. Our new host club is Melbourne Rugby Club, and they're based in Piran. It was a choice for us, I guess, to move away from Footscray to be a bit closer to the players, and basically make it a bit easier for the players to get to training and for supporters to come out and see us.
It's more than that, though, isn't it? I mean, you've got a different relationship with this club, which you've told me you're quite positive about.
Look, that's true. The Melbourne committee has been very, very supportive of, I guess, the goals of the Chargers. I guess they're very supportive of inclusiveness and participation in rugby union, and I guess they can see our vision of making the sport more inclusive, and they're right behind us on that. So, and they've also been very, very easy to work with in terms of getting developing players on the pitch.
How many is in a rugby side?
15 on the pitch at any one time.
And how many are going to the Bingham Cup in Manchester?
We've got a squad of 25. So the maximum you can have in a squad is 25 players. And that allows for injuries and that sort of thing. We've got up to 5 or 6 games to play in a 3-day span. So there's invariably going to be injuries and a few dings and bangs here and there.
That's pretty hardcore. Five games in that short time.
I've been to a few with the Sydney Convicts. I think this is my 5th Bingham Cup, and they're hard work. You play 2 games on the first day, and then you're stuffed basically that night. And you know, the only solace is an ice bath, and they're not much fun.
and then you're back on the field the next day.
And then you've got to play 2 games the next day, and then 2 games the day after that. It's a lot of work.
Now, to take a squad of 25 people to the other side of the planet is an expensive feat, I would imagine.
It certainly is. And actually, it's not just the 25 players. We've got a crew of 40, so there's the 25 players. We've got a coach, 2 team managers, I guess a medical specialist and a few others.
And the hangers-on.
Partners, yeah, plus the partners and supporters. So there's actually 40 of us heading over to Manchester. It's a big crew, and as you say, a fair bit of money.
That is it. Well, 40 people to go from Melbourne to represent Melbourne in Manchester is really a great feat and really exciting. This is something that's been a long time in the planning, though.
Well, actually, Melbourne will be the second highest, the second biggest contingent outside the top eight clubs. So that's the Sydney's and Manchester's and New York and San Fran's. So outside that group of eight players, we're the second largest contingent. So it's exciting. It's exciting for us. As you say, it's been a lot of work to make it happen, and, you know, between fundraising and sponsorship and recruiting, and the Melbourne gay community, gay and lesbian community has been amazingly supportive of what we've been trying to achieve.
No mean feat, though, to get what I imagine would be quite a lot of money to get everybody across to the other side of the world, and to make sure that you're looked after. I mean, there are not just the uniforms, but, you know, you've got flights and accommodation, all of that sort of stuff. I'm sure there are entry fees into this particular event. How have you gone about doing that?
Well, the fundraising target was $30,000, and we've just on achieved that through the generous support of the Melbourne community and our sponsors, and, you know, the gay community. And that will get us jerseys, it gets us team wear, like polos and hoodies and that sort of stuff. It paid $5,000 in tournament registration or thereabouts, and it's going towards an accommodation subsidy towards most of the players. Plus, there's a few guys that that need a little bit of extra help, and we've been able to do that. But the bulk of the trip is self-funded by the players.
Melbourne Chargers only came into existence in 2009. 3 years later, you're going to the other side of the world to represent yourselves and the country and Melbourne as a team in your own right. That is an extraordinary feat to do that in just 3 years. It's just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly, and it's not something we could have done without the support of, you know, support of Joy FM and the support of MCV, our media partner. And everyone who's bought a raffle ticket and you know, come to the barbecues and bought sausages and all that sort of stuff, bought membership in the club. I mean, we couldn't have done it without that support.
One of the other successes of the organisation is your Rugby 101 events. Now, tell us about those, because there are people going to Manchester that have only been playing the game for a couple of months.
Yeah, actually, that's right. That's right. And I mean, representing your city, or in this case, even your country, is an opportunity that not many players get to experience. And for suburban rugby players, much less people in their first year of rugby, is, you know, to get to do that is pretty exceptional. But getting on to your question about 101, we do those once a year in about January, and it's the opportunity for people who've, you know, never picked up a rugby ball to come and see what training with the Chargers is like.
Sam Minter, the president of Melbourne Chargers, is with us on the line. Now, Sam, how does the Bingham Cup work? Just take us through what is actually going to happen whilst you're over in Manchester.
Yeah, then, as I said, there's six games. The first three games, and as in the first day, the two games on the first day and the first game on the second day are pool matches. So they use those matches to determine what level each team is at. And then after the third game on the Saturday, they divide the tournament up into divisions. So the top eight teams will be competing for the Bingham Cup and the Bingham Plate. They're the top two tiers. And that'll be the established clubs like Sydney, San Fran, New York, London, Manchester, that sort of thing. The bulk of the others will compete for the Bingham Bowl, the Bingham Shield, and the Bingham Spoon. So where exactly Melbourne will fit into that, I'm not sure. We're hoping to be competing for the Bowl and Shield. Although, as you say, we've got a lot of new players and it's up in the air at the moment. We'll see.
Sydney Convicts are also going. You've been as part of their team to Bingham Cup in Manchester previously. What are their chances like?
Look, they stand a very, very good chance of winning the Bingham Cup again. They've won two of the five Bingham Cup tournaments. They were narrow runners-up last time to the New York Gotham Knights, but I know that they're taking their Bingham Cup preparation very seriously. They've got some pretty handy guys, so they stand a pretty good chance. Their B squad, I don't know. I don't know how they'll go. Again, they've got some pretty good coaching resources and some pretty handy players, so they stand a good chance of competing for the bowl, and hopefully we'll be up there as well.
Well, Melbourne wishes the Melbourne Chargers well in Manchester for the Bingham Cup. We're going to follow your journey to the competition and back over the following weeks. So we're looking forward to being a part of your success. So Sam Minter, thank you very much for joining us on the line today.
Thanks, Dean. Good to talk to you again.
Broadcasting across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming live around the world at joy.org.au. You're on the line with Dean Beck. And it is my great pleasure to welcome on the line Wayne Nichols, proprietor of Saks Fetish and Leather on Oxford Street in Sydney. And Wayne joins us to discuss what I think is a bizarre plan. Wayne, thanks for joining us.
Hello, Dean. Thank you for having me on.
I don't know whether Sydney's having me on. Community.
I ask myself the same question often.
Now, Oxford Street has been struggling in the last decade. What is it like for you as a business person on the street at the moment?
It's very desolate at the moment. Oxford Street, after the upgrade in about 2002, never recovered. The rents are very much out of kilter with the level of economic activity. Pretty much all interesting retail that used to be there at various points either failed or moved on. And it's become a very nighttime economy. So the only businesses that seem to do well are those that really service the nightclub industry. So those that are out on 3 o'clock in the morning and they need a kebab or a pizza, that seems to be where the level of activity is, but at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it's a very different street.
That's got to be hard for you to sustain endlessly. How do you? I mean, yours is a destination store, I guess. It's not the type of store that most people would just wander into. So, in that regard, I guess you've got a slight advantage. But that doesn't do well for the entire street, surely.
No. We are fortunate, I guess, in a way that we are a destination store and we've been there for a very long time. And, you know, once upon a time, there were 7 stores like mine in and around Oxford Street. We're the last man standing. So whilst we've got a much bigger share of that pie, the pie itself has become very small. But, you know, it's balanced out for us and we're still one of the lucky ones. But I speak to many of the other shopkeepers on a regular basis and they're all pretty much tearing their hair out at the moment.
Now, the New South Wales government, along with the City of Sydney and Randwick, are looking at plans to potentially put in a light rail system. I'm presuming that means like a tram system up the lower end of Oxford Street.
Yes. The plan was actually, it's been proposed many times over the years, and Clover Moore actually was spouting on about it 4 years ago. It's come up again as a discussion point, and Clover, I guess, is keen to make these sorts of announcements in an election year. But what people do often forget about that, no matter how much we hear about Clover's idea here, it is the responsibility of the state government. It is part of the infrastructure of public transit, so it comes under their jurisdiction, and it would then be managed by the RTA, who have a long history of being a very bureaucratic organisation in Sydney. So Clover's proposal is out there, but it's been out there for many years. I'd say about 4 years ago was the last time I heard it. And so whether or not another 4 years will go past and more feasibility studies and what have you, that might be about as far as that goes. But the latest and most disturbing part of the news on this is that the RTA have come up with an alternative plan that would, in their mind, be cheaper and less disruptive and take the tram up through Surry Hills And I have heard it discussed that it might even be for Bow Street, and it would bypass Oxford Street altogether on its way to Randwick.
Hang on a minute. At present, there is no light rail at all.
Well, there's a limited amount of light rail within Sydney.
Right.
But, there's nothing heading out to the eastern suburbs.
And so this would be a totally new stream of transport up through the area.
Yes.
Oxford Street at present is currently a major thoroughfare with a lot of traffic.
Yes.
And no opportunity to park there, which doesn't help you shop owners.
Parking is appalling.
This idea of a light rail system out through to Randwick, we were talking about the fact that it may even bypass Oxford Street altogether, which is a major thoroughfare as it's currently situated. Yeah. Why don't they turn it into something that is more restricted in its flow so that you don't have buses screaming through there at 1,000 miles an hour? And maybe put parking back along the street so it slows everything down.
The problem we have with a lot of that is that there is an ongoing struggle between the City of Sydney and the RTA. So whilst the City of Sydney were not particularly in favour of the way in which the road system there is now managed, they are completely outside of their jurisdiction. It comes under RTA and state government.
It is a bit of a death trap trying to cross the road there.
It's quite perilous, it really is. In fact, I've seen quite a number of fatalities on that road. But the amount of traffic that goes up and down there is absolutely phenomenal. And it travels. You just can't pull up anyway. And you know what Sydney traffic is like. Even if you were trying to pull up, there's going to be someone behind you who will be quite vocal about that.
Now, in one of the gay newspapers this week, there is a number of comments published by various people who live around the area and operate businesses around the area. They all seem quite in favour of this idea of putting a light rail system through the middle of Oxford Street. What are your thoughts, Wayne?
Well, look, I have to say, anything that will slow down that street is definitely something I would support. The idea that people can jump on and jump off hopefully would mean that there will be more people that will consider coming to Oxford Street as a destination on their way somewhere else. But like I was saying, you know, at the moment that street is just a major motorway. So in my opinion, it would be helpful if it was a lane of traffic taken out. And if the light rail certainly replaced some of those buses, those buses are perilous in themselves, particularly as they have to take a right-hand turn into Anzac Parade from Oxford Street. They have to cross over four lanes of traffic, and there's a lot of those buses doing that all day long. So the opportunity there is quite high for accidents.
You stated earlier that really the only businesses that seem to be succeeding are the nighttime nightclub pubs and clubs along the street. I'm presuming that that is still pretty much in the domain of the straight community, the gays and lesbians.
Probably, yes.
The gays and lesbians have moved on, haven't they?
Yes, yes. The gay and lesbian clubs and bars, but what's left there, certainly not the ones that are doing well out of all of that. It is much more the straight clubs.
Has the slack been picked up in the likes of Newtown and elsewhere, or is it just disappeared?
I think it's, to some extent, King Street Newtown has been an up-and-coming bohemian little street, which has picked up some of what Oxford Street used to have. But you know, at the moment, I think we're probably facing the worst retail conditions in this country and probably internationally that we've seen for 20 years. So I think when you combine the problems of the street with a terribly depressed economy, and I've argued for a very long time that if you take the mining sector out of the statistics, that Australia is really already in a recession, just not a technical one. So those two factors combined really do make life very difficult for everybody that's trying to run a business on Oxford Street.
It's a couple of years since I was on Oxford Street myself, but when I was there last, there were a lot of vacant retail stores. Is that what's it like now?
Well, at the moment, the City of Sydney have they have a variety of little programs that they're trying to push. But they've pretty much failed to lease out many of their stores. And what many people won't necessarily know is that the largest part of the north side of Oxford Street, so that's the Darlinghurst side, is actually owned by the City of Sydney. It was compulsorily acquired back in the early 70s before the proposal for the tunnel under the harbour. And when the council bought it, it was planned that that was going to be a major freeway, Oxford Street, so they were going to demolish all the properties. Fortunately, that plan never went ahead and we did get the tunnel instead, but they've kept those properties. So they're a major landlord on the streets. Now, they've had very large vacancy rates for a number of years in the portfolio that they manage. But recently, they've decided that they will lease out many of these properties at a very reduced rate for businesses that are involved in any sort of artistic pursuit. And they're trying to...
How is that defined?
Yes, indeed. It's something that I've thought about how I could find my own business in that way.
Well, I would have thought you might have fitted into that category, actually.
I believe I do. And when these stores are paying $100 a week and yet they're wanting $1,500 a week from me, I think I could somehow mount a convincing argument.
Well, good luck with that one. We wish you well. And thank you very much for joining us today on the line and discussing basically what I thought initially was an absolute pie-in-the-sky idea of sticking a light rail up Oxford Street, but perhaps it's not as mad as it sounds.
I think it's a great idea, but unfortunately I don't think I'm going to see it this time of my retirement. It's going to be years away if it ever happens at all.
Wayne Nichols is the proprietor of Saks Fetish and Leather on Oxford Street. Thanks for joining us on the line today.
Thank you for having me, Dean.
You are with Dean Beck on the line.
Call Joy. 1-300-JOY-949. SMS 0427-JOY-949. Email on air at joy.org.au. You want to make
Tomorrow here on Joy is a very special occasion for two people. David and Sue are celebrating 12 months.
Two years
on air together.
Yeah.
How the hell have you managed to put up with that?
I know. But do you know what? The most wonderful thing is how it all started and how it's developed over the time. Like I said to Sue 2 years ago when we were looking for a new drive show host, so you should definitely do it. And you had to do it with the co-host. And she said, yeah, a few people have actually been pushing me and I would like to do it, but there's no one that I want to do it with that's approached me. And I went, there must be somebody out there. She said, well, there is. And I said, who? And she said, you.
Oh, is that how that happened?
That's how it happened.
Right.
And I said, oh. And I had no desire to do it at all. And she said, oh, we'll talk about it next week because we were out actually having a few drinks at the time. And I didn't really know Sue all that well. You know, it was a Joy event that we were at. And so anyway, the following week, she followed up. And we had a chat and went out for a coffee about it. Next minute, we were doing it. And we've become the best of friends.
It's a chemistry that really works on air.
Yeah.
You're both mad as each other.
Thank you.
But, and driving everybody else mad, as the saying goes. But it's a really lovely show. And it's a...
Thank you.
For the bloody Pet Shop Boys.
Well, do you know what? The really funny thing is that accidentally happened, like most things do on our show. And you know, like, and there's all the for and against. Like, every week we have people requesting Pet Shop Boys, and most weeks these days we don't do it, but every now and then I'll throw it in just for good measure, and it's just really quite funny how that happened, and that a lot of our segments have happened that way as well, like the verses, you know, the competition we do every week. We were doing it, and then we thought, oh no, people are sick of it, we'll stop it. The amount of SMSs that came through saying, where's your, you know, competition today? We want the competition between the two of you. And people love it. And they even say, oh, I'm voting for this one or that one, you know, like just for a vote. But I don't really like them. You don't have to play one of their songs. So, yeah, it's been fun in that respect as well, how we've really engaged our listeners that they're actually part of our show through SMS.
David and Sue on Friday Drive have done some pretty mad stunts throughout the last 2 years. Let's go through a couple of them.
one?
Okay, well, the royal wedding, which is 12 months ago, we did a whole show and we played wedding songs, of course, and we had a wedding reception out in the foyer, and we had about 30 or 40 to 50 people that came along the night. Sue dressed as a bride and I dressed as a groom, and we had a wedding cake and cut the cake. It was just really a lot of fun that night.
More recently, you had the John and Yoko thing.
John and Yoko, which was fantastic. It was part of our tech drive, but it's our version of having a bit of fun with the marriage equality thing. And we got on ABC TV.
I know. You know, like, that blew me away.
How cool was that?
And when a friend of mine was watching it at the time and said, that's Joy on the news. And I went, oh, it is not. And he said, yeah, there's two people in bed. And I went, no, there isn't. I went, that's a stunt. Well, it's got nothing to do with marriage equality.
And it was, and it was, which was just perfect timing because the Catholic Church on that day sent out the thing to all their parishioners saying, you know, like, vote against anti-marriage in the gay community. And so, you know, like, all of a sudden ABC TV were aware of us doing it and bang, here they were filming us.
It works. Yep. It works well.
Yeah.
What else have you done? You do not just your Friday drive stuff. You do other stuff as well. You do special event stuff for Joy too. The two of you?
The two of us, yeah. Mm. Oh, well, we did for Valentine's Day, we did Perfect Match, which you were part of that.
Oh, yes.
And which was a lot of fun. And that was just another little thing. Oh, you know, like, it's all this about people, were, you know, couples, you know, like, let's do something for the singles. And it became a fun night that
night. Who comes up with these ideas? Is it you or Sue?
We think through them together. Right, you know, like, but I think most of them are actually mine. And so goes, all right, whatever. And you know, like, and we did a Friday the 13th horror show, which we had cobwebs all through the studios.
Nice.
And you know, like, Kathy Freeman, we got her to come in when she was pregnant. We did a baby shower with her, and then she talked about her charity as well. But she was really moved because we actually had gifts for her baby here, and she was undoing them as the show went on. And so, you know, like, there's been some really special moments, and we actually invite a lot of our on-air listeners to come in to be part of our show.
And you do this VIP thing as well, which is nice.
Yeah,
I like that.
And you know, like, James Hardy, for instance, who is so well-known around Joy now because he's done the film The History of Joy. Was that the name of it? I think it was History of Joy.
So it's on our website.
Yes, yeah.
In various forms. Yes.
Something like that.
Joy.org.au, you'll find it.
And he came to Joy through a VIP with us.
Is that right?
Yeah. Oh,
I didn't realise that,
and
how he appeared.
Yeah, and Sammy, who you know, like,
gorgeous,
working on our radiothon, she came through our show as well. So we've picked up a lot of people around Joy because what we do, we plop them into the studio with us. They can engage with us or not engage with us on air, and then they see how fun Joy is and want to become part of it.
What's happening tomorrow, Friday, from 4 o'clock?
From 4 o'clock.
For a Friday drive with David and Sue. Driving you mad.
Yep.
Special occasion.
A special occasion, our second year together. And we're inviting all our listeners to come in, along with all the Joy On Air people and volunteers that we know really well here. And look, any excuse to have a party is our motto.
Absolutely.
And so, therefore, we're going to reflect over a lot of the things we've been talking about today. We're going to reflect on them and how much fun we've had and with our listeners as well. And we want them to tell us what things they remember about us.
Sounds like if you want 5 seconds on air, you'll get it tomorrow.
Absolutely.
And a very structured format, clearly.
You're not.
David Hunt, thank you very much for joining us on the line today.
My
and good
pleasure.
Luck with your second anniversary.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure. Almost time for me to get out of here, but before we do, a very big thank you to 3AW's Neil Mitchell. Don't forget next week, next Thursday from 10 till noon. 3AW's Neil Mitchell and Joy 94.9's David McCarthy will be joining forces in a simulcast as they thrash out issues regarding youth suicide. Big thanks to Wayne Nichols from Sydney, who joined us to discuss the idea of a light rail system up Oxford Street. Thanks to Sam Minter, president of Melbourne Chargers, David Hunt and Sue tomorrow. Don't forget their second anniversary on air together. Join them for that tomorrow from 4 p.m. And join me tonight with Andrew the Apprentice from 9 p.m. on Hide and Seek. So till next time, you keep well. Take care. Bye for now.
Joy 94.9.
Hi, I'm Kylie Minogue, also known as Kylie from Camberwell.
Hey, it's Richard Reed.
Hey, this is Winter Gordon.
Hi, Matt Preston from MasterChef.
What's up, party people? It's the legendary DJ Spinderella.
Hey there, I'm Adam Lambert.
Hello, this is Kate Sobrano.
Hey, what's up, guys? I'm Alexandra Berg.
This is Katie Noonan.
Hi, this is Francois Sagatz.
Hello, this is Katie Lang.
G'day, I'm Barry Bissell.
Hello, this is Tina Arena.
Hi, this is Paris Wells.
Hi, I'm Cindy Lauper.
Hi, this is Tim Campbell.
Hi, this is Sear.
Hi, I'm Vanessa Morrissey.
Hey, I'm Darren Hayes.
Hi, I'm Jade Leonard.
Hi, I'm Shaka Khan.
Hi, this is Kathy Freeman.
Hi, I'm Daniel Kowalski.
Hey, this is Jane Lynch, and you're listening to Australia's gay and lesbian radio station.
Hey, everybody, this is Chris Willis.
Put your hands up
for Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station.
All night and day long, Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with Joy.